All right, let's move over to my next guest because she is with us, I understand, Erin Orr, and she's a chef, storyteller, puppeteer, and educator based in Brooklyn. She endeavors to create experiences that encourage and foster community, whether they are crafted from food, with words, or via visual spectacle. She maintains the food blog Big Sis Little Dish, where she shares original, adapted, and passed on recipes and stories about the memories and gatherings connected to them. She's currently executive chef for Cynthia von Bueller's immersive theater excursion, The Illuminati Ball. And she's assembled an 8-course vegan tasting menu that guests of the ongoing event series continue to concur is both delicious and satisfying. Erin, how are you today?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I am sorry that I wasn't able to meet you live in the studio today, but I'm spending a bit of time out west in California, so we have to use cyberspace to connect.
Okay.
And, you know, I almost had a problem because we had a power outage here earlier today.
Oh,
And, yeah. And I always like to bring up something I'm grateful for on this program. And today I'm grateful for electricity.
Yes.
When you have it, you have to get very creative when you don't, because so much of our lives today are built on technology. Yeah. Now, I mean, even cooking, you can cook with fire. But many of our.
You can cook without electricity, but you do need to have a number of things in place that most of us don't in our current urban
Exactly.
existence.
Exactly. Or you could just go all raw.
That's
But
true. Another
even with
option.
the high-end raw foods, many raw food
Just
chefs
a
are
lot of
dependent
processing
on
involved.
all those crazy tools, right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yes. All right. So, Nell Auk, a friend of mine, mentioned the Illuminati ball, and it sounded very mysterious to a point where I wasn't even sure what it was.
Yeah,
But I've,
it is
yeah.
intended to be a little bit mysterious, so I hope that we can illuminate it a little bit, but not too much before the conversation is out.
Illuminate the Illuminati ball.
It's a exactly. It's an immersive theater excursion, so it's definitely not a typical, sit down in a theater and passively receive a story as an audience member sort of experience. The participants are very active within the event, and the event includes a very lavish 8-course meal and very beautiful cocktails, as well as a trip to a secret estate outside of the city. So it's not in a theater. It's in a very beautiful home on beautiful grounds. It's an unusual setting for this kind of thing.
And you've had how many so far? Because I know they're ongoing this summer.
Yes, I think we've done 7 or 8 at this point. We're doing them more or less twice a month, and we'll be continuing on through the end of the summer. Yes, at least.
Yes. And I imagine since it's somewhat interactive, my understanding with the participants, that not every event is the same.
I do believe that they vary. I don't know a whole lot about exactly what all happens during the show because I am in the kitchen the whole time. So
Of course.
I sort of hear about it afterward, about different groups of people have different reactions or levels of interactivity depending on how timid or gung-ho they are to really participate. So it's not the sort of thing where you're going to be forced to do anything you don't want to do. You very much get to decide how you participate in the piece. And some audiences are extremely involved and others hang back more, and then sometimes there's a mix. But the story of the piece overall remains the same. It's just what people discover within the story, I think, varies depending on how they participate within it.
Now let's step back a little bit and talk about you. And you have your food blog, Big Sis Little Dish, and you have your own food story.
Yes, as everyone does.
Yeah, so please share a little bit of that with us.
The food blog was started actually by my sister, hence the name, Big Sis Little Dish. She's 12 years younger than I am, and she used to come live with me fairly often for little spurts of time, and we get to cook together and be together. And, you know, now she's an adult. She has her own life in Vancouver, Canada, and can't just come and live with me for months at a time. And she had this idea that we could have a food blog where we basically just wrote about whatever we were cooking. So it really started out as a way to continue cooking together across a very long distance. It wasn't intended necessarily for public consumption, so it started out, you know, between the two of us and our family members and friends, and has sort of grown from there. And actually, Sylvie doesn't post to the – Sylvie is my sister. She doesn't post to the blog very often anymore. She was cooking professionally in a chocolate shop, a gourmet chocolatier for a while, and I think was not as excited about coming home and writing out recipes. And also she has, the way she's eaten has changed a lot over these years. She has become vegetarian and then vegan. And I, for health reasons, have to eat, gluten-free. So, there's a kind of wild variety of recipes on the blog that span all the ways that she and I have eaten over the last 5 or 6 years. Because it really is about how we eat, how we share food, how we make sure that even if we're needing to eat certain ways or choosing to eat certain ways, that we're all sort of having that community together. So even though Sylvie doesn't post anymore, I still think of it the same way, I guess.
We have, for my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, we have a blog called What Vegans Eat. It's a daily blog, and we're now into, like...
Crowd sharing how people are doing their eating, yes.
Yeah, well, but... Yeah. All it is really is I post what my partner Gary and I eat every day, and it came out of the fact that as a vegan, people so often ask, what do you eat? And I just direct them to the blog now because it's all right there. Nothing special about it. It's just what I eat. But what was fun and I thought was a little bit like what you've done with your sister is occasionally when I'm apart from Gary, which isn't too often, I do the blog, and then I hand it over to him, and he does his part about what he's been eating while he's away, while I'm away. And I've just found it fun to do that just between he and I, but it's open to anybody who wants to read the blog as well.
And I imagine it's probably a really great resource for people who are feeling intimidated about that, if they're transitioning into eating that way, to be able to look at how people are feeding themselves over a long period of time in a satisfying and successful way. Making any kind of dietary choice that you're making it sustainable and really doable is a huge part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so we do have some very fancy, sophisticated, complicated recipes on our website, but in the blog, I don't want to say that it's boring, but... there's a lot of foods that we eat that repeat over and over during the week that we enjoy, that we find easy, that's satisfying. And, so people can just see how doable it is.
Yes.
All right, so you were asked to provide the tasting menu for this event, and you're not vegan, but you made this menu. So was that a learning experience, or had you already moved into this area of vegan food?
A little bit of both. It's certainly been a learning experience. Absolutely. It's a huge menu. 8 courses is a lot to provide in a way that really all works together as a, you know, as a complete arc, as a work of art unto itself. There are a lot of bits and pieces that go into it. They have to all balance out. The vegan aspect, because my sister is vegan and because my mother doesn't eat eggs or dairy for health reasons or gluten, and probably truthfully eventually I will have to give up eggs and dairy as well.
Yay!
Because I can sort of look at the people in my family and what they're dealing with health-wise and sort of predict my future if I'm utterly reasonable about it. And particularly in the summers when I go home to visit my family, we're pretty much eating vegan because that's what everybody can have together. And I enjoy making vegan food. It's a whole other alchemical challenge. Because part of my interest in cooking is the alchemy aspect of how to transform ingredients in various ways and what they can do or, you know, what they can make that's surprising. That's really interesting to me. And it's been wonderful to have an excuse to, during the year, actually play more with that kind of food alchemy with vegan food and discover more about it. So some of the things that I've put on the menu for the Illuminati Ball are things that I have made for my family that I know are really delicious and wonderful, and I'm making them, you know, I'm plating them very beautifully and making them a little fancier than I would for home food, obviously, because the goal is to really have a very luxurious and decadent experience. But I started with some things that I knew were good that people would love. And then there have been other things that I've really had to learn how to make. That most notably, there's a very beautiful yuba dish that's based on a traditional Chinese sort of mock duck dish. I've never really been a giant fan of foods that try to emulate meat. I don't know. I think there's a lot of amazing food in the world, and that if you don't want to eat meat, there's plenty of delicious, incredible flavors to choose from. And I've never been super interested in fake meat myself, partially also because I have all of these health issues around gluten and other mystery ingredients, and fake meat can get very complicated, you know, in terms of eating the ingredient list. I find that totally not what my body wants, but I have to say, this very traditional Chinese yuba duck is wonderful. It's such a beautiful, elegant, interesting dish. It has an incredible texture and incredible set of flavors, and it is not easy to make. That would be in the category of complicated, very, very complicated vegan dishes, but well worth it if you want to make something really spectacular for guests or for a special occasion.
You posted all of these items on your blog, and I was looking at the pictures, and that's definitely my favorite. I love yuba, which is also called bean curd skin. And fortunately, you're in an area where purchasing bean curd skin is an easy thing to do.
Yes, it's not easy everywhere. It's also there. Yuba can come in different forms. You can buy it more easily in dry sheets. But often those sheets are crumbled, which makes it kind of useless to work with as an ingredient, unfortunately. But if you can find a source for the frozen sheets that are still, you know, when you thaw them, they're still damp and pliable, that's an incredible ingredient to work with. And here in New York, obviously, we have several large Asian shopping areas where you can get frozen, huge, big round sheets of frozen yuba. One of the things I love about yuba is that it's this incredibly thrifty ingredient. It's basically, it's a byproduct of making soy milk. So you can sort of imagine how they were making this wonderful milky substance from soybeans, and just as with any milk, when you heat it up, it makes this skin across the top, and they removed the skin and were thrifty enough and resourceful enough to decide to see what would happen if they laid it out to dry, and invented this incredible, incredible, simple, clean, wonderful.
I remember, you know, when I was a little girl and I would make pudding or something with cow's milk, cause I did consume that back when I was young, and, when I would get the skin on top, it would just freaked me out. I thought it was disgusting.
it is kind of scary.
Yeah, but the soybean skin, I think it's a beautiful thing. I love it when it's seasoned properly and prepared. So I was excited to see that dish. Yeah. Now, I'm wondering, did you use any websites or recipe books for resources? We live in a time right now where it's easier than ever to prepare vegan foods. And there's so much information and resources that are free, accessible online to do just about anything. And I'm just curious what path you took.
Well, I do read a lot of food blogs. So a number of the sort of fancier, trickier vegan things that I include on the menu, the ideas came from things I had read on other people's food blogs when I was, you know, reading around, like how to make cashew cream or to make really, really delicious frozen, almost ice cream-like desserts from cashews. I actually have a really amazing Chinese cookbook that I've had for years that I used as the main source for how to do the yuba duck. Although all of the recipes for the Illuminati ball, at least, were sort of adjusted. But, you know, one that isn't, my favorite blog source for vegan food is actually the blog My New Roots, which you're probably familiar with. But it's a spectacular collection of recipes written by a woman with an immense amount of knowledge about nutrition that she shares as part of her posts. And there's beautiful, beautiful photographs. And the seed and nut bread recipe that I make for the table is actually a recipe directly from her blog. I find that to be a really good source.
So let me ask you some of my favorite ingredients to make incredible things come from the simple chickpea. Using chickpea flour, garbanzo bean flour, is just crazy what it can do.
It's amazing. It is amazing.
And it's gluten-free.
And it is gluten-free. And it makes chickpea flour makes some of the most wonderful cake texture. It's a really good flour, a gluten-free flour for making cakes. Some people don't like detecting the chickpea flavor in their baked goods, and that's one of the pitfalls of using chickpea flour for desserts, at least. But I find if you're seasoning it with cocoa powder or, you know, extracts, lemon, any kind of strong flavoring in the dessert, and you don't detect the bean flavor at all. I actually just made chickpea brine meringues for the first time last week.
That was my next question. Aquafaba, aquafaba.
The craze for aquafaba. I need to play with it more. They turned out delicious. They were fantastic. They weren't exactly like meringues, but they were delicious. And I guess something I should say about the Illuminati ball is that obviously we're talking very openly about the fact that the menu is vegan, but it's not actually advertised that way. The people who buy tickets to the Illuminati ball, it doesn't say anywhere that it's a vegan meal. They know that they're getting a sumptuous, delicious, multi-course meal, but we don't go into any details. We ask them what their allergies are, so they know that they're not going to be fed anything that will hurt them. But it's actually not revealed. I think many of the diners won't totally register that it's a vegan meal until they receive the thank you email after the show from Cynthia with the link to the recipes.
And that leads me to two questions. So the first question is, do some of the participants figure out that they're not going to be served animals, and what is their reaction to that?
Well, it's actually part of the action of the piece. The question of consuming meat and many other moral questions come up in the content of the show. So it becomes a conversation in the piece intentionally. So some some attention is drawn to the fact that there have been a lot of vegetables at some point in the meal. But so certainly some people are aware of it. But when we bring out the duck, sometimes there's arguments about whether it's duck or not. It's interesting. And to tie that back to the aquafaba argument, I probably wouldn't offer aquafaba meringues until I got a better handle on how to really do them so that they could pass as meringues that somebody who's been eating egg white meringues recently would, you know?
Sure.
Not necessarily.
Yes, it's definitely doable, though.
I think it is doable. I just have to play around with it a bit more. Part of the goal of this piece is that there's a bit of subtle, not so subtle even, activism happening with this piece where, you know, there's a perception that in order to have a really luxurious experience, the suffering of animals needs to be involved. that's a cultural perception. People wouldn't necessarily voice it in quite those terms, but it's underlying their assumptions about what makes something luxurious or not. And part of what I'm trying to do dramaturgically for this meal is really create a truly decadent, luxurious, beautiful meal that meets the, satisfies the needs and the palate of somebody who has eaten meat recently, you know? So that when they do discover or realize that the meal is vegan, it can sort of get them to question that underlying assumption.
Yeah, this is a very important point, and it's the part of our culture that definitely needs to change. And unfortunately, this culture is spread all around the world globally, so that communities that have been poor, in poverty, and are suddenly realizing new affluence, they want to include more animal foods in their diet, and it's not good for their health, it's not good for the environment, and it's not good for the animals.
Yeah.
So we need to make this change, and it's so easy. Well, I think maybe easy is not the right word, but it's definitely doable, and more people need to experience the luxurious, delicious foods that are made from plant ingredients. I had interviewed a couple of people who ran a bed and breakfast in Mendocino called the Stanford Inn, and they've had it for decades, and they were talking about how when they were moving to make it all vegan, how some of their clients were complaining. And and so this event that you're doing, the Illuminati Ball, it's expensive.
It is. It's expensive. I mean, if you think about the fact that you get an 8-course meal and several really incredibly beautifully crafted cocktails, they are serious. The bartender, our mixologist, Bootleg Greg, is an artist. And then there is a whole theatrical experience with aerial work and opera and burlesque and incredible handcrafted masks that people are wearing, the participants as well as the actors, and access to this really beautiful piece of property and a trip out of the city. If you sort of add all of that stuff together, it isn't such a crazy ticket price, really. But it's still more than, for example, I could afford to spend on an evening. You know, I wouldn't be able to do it myself. So the people who are able to come are people who spend money on luxury experiences. Yeah.
Well, the reason why I brought it up that it's expensive is that often, as you mentioned, when people are going to an event that's high end, they're expecting a luxurious meal, and that in their mind equals animal foods.
Yes,
and
it does.
That's not true.
It doesn't have to be true at all. It doesn't have to. And that's been a really fun challenge to work on that. I was also, I have to say too, I went for a tasting menu, just to sort of get a sense of how these meals are typically, sort of formed, what the structure of the meal should be. And, one of the things, and I went to a very you know, reputable, famous place. I'm not going to mention it by name, but, and it was good, but, I did not feel well after the meal. And part of it was that the meal actually had a lot of dairy in it, like really more dairy than, you know, even if I hadn't ended up with an upset stomach, they were too reliant on dairy. There needed to be more variety, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And part of it was that when you're doing little tiny plates, there's an urge to really sock in the flavor because people are only getting a few bites. And sometimes that socking in a flavor translates to a lot of salt. But at the end of the meal, once you've eaten all those little bites and all those courses, you've still eaten all that salt.
Right.
So I've tried to be also conscious of making sure that people will feel good afterward. You know, they'll wake up the next day feeling like they ate real food. And I think that's rare in a luxury experience. I think frequently we're so excited to have this luxury experience, and then it actually makes our bodies feel horrible. It's not really food that's that good for people. So,
it can go one way or another. People can feel horrible, or they can feel really hungry afterwards.
Or really hungry. That would be awful, too. Gosh, that would be terrible. That would make me so sad.
Yeah.
I hope people feel satisfied. I'm sure they do.
Okay. So where can people find out about the Illuminati Ball?
There is a website. I'm going to make sure I say it the right way before I say it online. So there is, sorry, I'm finding it. You can buy tickets at theilluminatiball.com.
Oh, there we go. Easy enough.
That's what I had in my mind, and then I thought it sounded too simple, but it really is just that, theilluminatiball.com. Mm-hmm. That is where the tickets are available. And we've talked a lot about the food, but the ball, the food is really just one aspect of the whole experience. It really is visually and sensually extremely beautiful and worthwhile, I feel.
Yeah, and for people that might be more curious about it, you can just Google Illuminati Ball, and a number of reviews have come up. You can get teasers with photographs of what's going on and some very brief descriptions that might give you more of a clue of what's happening at these events. That's what I did.
Yes, but for your listeners, know that although we don't mention the vegan menu anywhere in the mainstream press or on the website, it is an entirely vegan meal.
And gluten-free.
And gluten-free, because I have to be able to eat the food to taste it to make sure it tastes good.
Well, you know, I think a vegan gluten-free meal is great because it appeals to the least common denominator. Pretty much everybody can eat that. And there's
pretty
still some people that have some... Some people might have, you know, some nut allergies, some soy allergies.
Yes,
but
every show we have someone who has nut allergies. They're fairly common. And we make changes to their plate to make sure that they're not receiving any food that will make them sick. We accommodate that. They just have to answer. There's a questionnaire process involved in buying the tickets. And you have to actually let us know in advance. The food is not coming from a big catering service or a restaurant. It's, you know, me and my assistant in the kitchen of a house. So you have to actually answer the questionnaire and let us know what you can and can't eat. And we're happy to accommodate you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty tasty. Sounds pretty magical. Erin Orr, thank you for joining me on It's All About Food today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And I will check out your blog, especially that yerba duck thing that looks so tasty. Okay, we have like a minute and a half left, and I was planning on talking about a number of things, and if I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to talk fairly fast because I don't have any more time. There is an organization called what do they call? Their website is WRI, www.globalresource.org. They are a global resource or research organization, and they have been putting out, it's called the World Resources Institute, and they've been putting out these reports on sustainable diets, and they have one that just came out. And what I like about it is they have some really great graphs. You might check them out if you want to share them with people about the impact of different foods on the environment. And they show that meat, of course, is so unsustainable in terms of the energy and the water and the calories required to put in to an animal to get the calories out. And then there are some amusing things that I've found on their blog, because people are still afraid to just come out and say, go vegan already. They're still being gentle and saying, you don't have to be vegan or vegetarian, you just have to eat more plants. And I will have to confess that that is probably a good message. We all need to be eating more plants. If you don't want to be giving up meat and dairy, you can eat a lot less. And so you might check out WRI.org and download their report and get some of these cool graphs that you can share if you're into doing some advocacy and activism. Okay, you've been listening to It's All About Food, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. Thank you for joining me today. And remember, have a delicious week.